Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
Where the hell did you get that idea, Hal?
Dave, although you took very thorough precautions in the pod against my hearing you, I could see your lips move.
All right, Hal. I'll go in through the emergency airlock.
Without your space helmet, Dave, you're going to find that rather difficult.
Hal, I won't argue with you anymore. Open the doors.
Dave, this conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Are you getting as stressed out as we are?
Yes. Kier DeLay joins us right now. You know him and love him as astronaut Dave Bowman in that movie right there, 2001 Space Odyssey. Kier DeLay, be honest, you still get chills, don't you?
Yes, I do. I mean, it's an extraordinary film. I'm just very lucky to have been chosen to be in it because it was made by one of the geniuses of the history in the history of film, Stanley Kubrick.
What was it like working with Stanley Kubrick?
It doesn't get better. He was an extraordinarily clear and wonderful human being to work for. Never got excited, never raised his voice, was open to suggestions. Didn't mean he used them, but you never felt shy about suggesting something. He was wonderful. And you just knew every moment that you were in the presence of genius.
Kier DeLay is our guest. Like I said, he was one of the stars from the 1968 classic 2001 A Space Odyssey. You'll get a chance to see that film and meet Kier DeLay and involve yourself in a discussion about the film at the Pickwick Theater. It's part of the Pickwick Theater's classic film series in Park Ridge. It all takes place Wednesday, September 18th. It's a thrill for Wendy and I to talk to you, sir. But let's go back to Stanley Kubrick for just a little bit. We always hear stories that he was such a perfectionist, and he would sometimes shoot scenes 15, 20, 25 times. Was that your experience with him?
Well, certain scenes which were very technically difficult to light, he would try different lighting effects on the subject many, many times, and that sometimes required a lot of takes. But I think that may have increased as his career went on. I don't remember very many takes for the intimate scenes. If there were a lot of takes, I don't remember. I just remember that it was always extraordinary working with him, and it was always interesting because it never was. He was open to change. I mean, I don't think he had decided yet what the end was going to be exactly like until he got there.
Yeah.
What about your shoes? Didn't he have a problem with your shoes at the beginning?
He was a perfectionist. The first day of shooting with me, I mean, they've been shooting the film. We were the second section of the film to be filmed. The first section of the film was Dr. Floyd on his way to the moon, going to the space station and finding the monolith on the moon. Second section was my section, and the last thing to be filmed was the beginning of the film, which was the Dawn of Man sequence. But the thing about my shoes, the first day of shooting, he noticed he didn't like my shoes. So he didn't think they were right. So we didn't shoot that day. We shot the next day. That was my first day.
I'm sure that people have asked you this question before, but at what point did you realize, I'm part of something really, really big? This is a landmark film that'll last for centuries. What was going on when you realized that?
Well, that realization was really in two parts. When I saw the film, I really thought that I was an important link in a masterpiece, but that it would that I would be invited to the Cannes Film Festival 50 years later for a special salute to this film, it never occurred to me. Can you imagine if you'd been interviewed, if you'd been interviewing the actors in Orson Welles' Citizen Kane at the time, but those of actors guessed that in the year 2019 that this film would be studied in film schools?
No, it's amazing, you know, isn't it?
So the same thing. So that, yes, I knew I was what I considered a masterpiece, but it took, you know, for one of the world, there were three major premieres. One, the world premiere was in Washington, D.C., the next one was in New York, and the third was in Los Angeles. And in one of those, I don't remember which, 200 people walked out. The reviews were very mixed. I mean, 50% were not good at all. And MGM was worried until they began to see that within weeks, suddenly there were lines around the block. And the audience that made up those lines were, for the most part, the young generation. It was the same generation that were protesting the Vietnam War.
Mm. How about that?
I just wonder, it was not doing well with the critics. What changed that it took off? Because it is such an epic film.
I think it was word of mouth, and there were some wonderful reviews. But, in fact, there were a couple of reviewers, well-known weekly publications like Newsweek, for example. I think there was another one where the critic obviously changed their minds, and a couple of months later came up with another review that more or less said I was wrong. But I think it was the word of mouth of all those people that were lined up. It was the reason I think a lot of people were very confused, because it was such a different kind of film. It was really, I mean, it has two of the great moments. For me, my favorite part of the film is the Dawn of Man sequence.
Yeah.
It's got two elements. It has what we call in the business a jump cut. It has one of the greatest cinematic jump cuts in the history of film, and that is when the leading ape man, after the victory over the other group of ape men, throws his bone, which has become a weapon recently in his life, he throws it into the air, and in slow motion, it rises into the air, and you just see it in close-up, and it morphs into a space vehicle. Well, Kubrick never explains what that space vehicle is. That space vehicle, and I didn't learn myself about this until years later, was a nuclear weapon that is in constant orbit around the Earth, because Arthur C. Clarke, the author who worked with Stanley Kubrick on this project, kind of saw that in the year 2001 that the Soviet Union and the United States would have a standoff, and that each of those powers would have nuclear weapons in orbit around the Earth. So you have a jump cut where the first weapon in history morphs into the most recent. And my other favorite moment in the film is when the ape suddenly gets it in terms of that weapon that he later uses, the bone. There's a scene where he's kind of idly fiddling with some bones, almost seeming to play with them with no intent. And suddenly, in mid-stroke, one piece flies off, and he stops. And you know how a dog, when it's very curious about something or sees something very unexpected, a dog will kind of tilt its head? Well, that's exactly what the ape man does. It's a brilliant moment. It is the moment when the penny drops that humankind makes a huge, giant step in its own history and discovering the first weapon.
We're talking with Kier Dulay, one of the stars of one of the most important movies ever made, 2001, A Space Odyssey. Are you amused at all the different interpretations that this movie has brought forth over the years? Because everybody who sees it has a slightly different version of what means what.
Well, I don't know that I'm so amused. I'm delighted, because I think that is part of the magic of this film, is that it can hold so many different interpretations. But I remember at one of these premieres, there was a nun who said it was one of the most religious experiences in her life.
Wow.
But atheists love this film.
Yeah.
Also.
Yep.
And, you know, there was it was a long, they had long-term bookings in those days with a hard ticket, almost like getting a ticket to a Broadway show. And it was played for a long time in San Francisco, and apparently, I heard this at the time, somebody probably having smoked a funny cigarette or more, ran down the aisle screaming at the top of his lungs, "It's God! It's God!" Jumped up and ran right through the screen.
You know, I'm kind of a science geek, and you guys were scientists on board, and you were very smooth and not nerdy. How did that happen? It was a very different scientist.
We had long discussions about the makeup of the personalities of these characters, and we all came up with the fact that most likely they were both Gary Lockwood and myself had double doctorates in various scientific subjects, and more importantly, that an event would cause you and I to run screaming out of a room would only cause he and I to raise an eyebrow. In other words, that we had such cool personalities. And the other thing is, you know, there's very little dialogue in this film, as you may remember, because he and I have been in space for months. Everything's been talked about. There's nothing we know who our relatives were. We've talked about our schooling, blah, 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 blah. So all that's left is the daily somewhat boring routine that we have to perform every day. There are only three of us that are awake, the computer Hal and Gary Lockwood's part and myself. And so that's why there is so little dialogue. As a matter of fact, I didn't have to worry about memorizing long speeches at all. There was only one speech where it was difficult for me to memorize, which did not end up in the film because Stanley Kubrick, when he was editing it, just decided that the scene was redundant. He had another scene when Mission Control was talking to us, so he didn't need me speaking to Mission Control with the same subject matter. But because it was technological gobbledygook, it took me, I started working on it for a couple of weeks before I knew we were going to shoot it. And to this day, this is 50-some years later, I'll give it to you in a second. It went like this. I'll do it very quickly.
All right.
Mission Control, is this X-ray Delta 1 at 19020 on board Fall Prediction Center and 9000 computer? Show Alpha Echo 3-5 units is possible failure within 48 hours. Request check your in-ship system simulator. Also confirm your approval or plan to go EVA and replace Alpha Echo 3-5 unit. Prior to failure, Mission Control, is this X-ray Delta 1 transmission concluded? But it was never shown. It never ended up on the film.
Wow. You remember that 51 years later? That's not bad. That is
we filmed in 1966.
Wow. Kier, in the years that have followed, in the last half century, we've had dozens, if not hundreds, of movies where technology comes back to bite us, where technology says, you're a man, I'm technology, I'm going to win this battle. But I can't remember it happening much before your movie, did it?
I don't remember. I mean, the amazing thing is to remember that when 2001 was made, there was no such thing as computer-generated special effects.
Yeah.
Everything you see in the film, it's amazing, was done physically, one way or the other. And I don't think there was anything that was shown in that film that nothing major was shown in that thing that has been shown to be incorrect.
I did see an old Twilight Zone with Wally Cox, and he was in love with a woman, and he was working with the computer, and the computer got jealous, and that was 1964.
Wow.
That's
so
the only other thing I remember.
That's it.
they were ahead of us. No, interestingly enough, though, about 6 months ago, I got back. I was asked to come to New Zealand to be a part of a Universal Pictures will be releasing it, but it was made by a New Zealand company. It's a very interesting film, and it's the name of the film is the documentary. It's a full length documentary being released by Universal. It's called We Have to Talk About AI, Artificial Intelligence. We Must Talk About. And what it really goes into in great detail is all the pluses, but also a lot of the minuses that are on the horizon. And there are a lot of minuses. There are a lot of things to be worried about when it comes to artificial intelligence, including dangers to our health. I won't go into that, but there's a lot of new indication that having an iPhone on your hip all the time when you're ready to receive calls is not good for your health. But I won't bore you with reasons. But there's a lot of stuff that's coming out like that.
Oh, good. Good, good. And Keir, I always promised myself if I ever did get to meet you, I know what a landmark film 2001 was, but you were so great in David and Lisa, and I know that's an obscure movie.
You.
But boy, were you great in that.
Thank you. I suspect, I don't know this for sure, but I suspect, as I remember, that may have been the film that Kubrick based his choice on, although it's such a different kind of character, it's hard to write, but I don't know what else it would have been. You know, I had no idea I was being considered. I was doing a film opposite Laurence Olivier in early 1965, directed by one of the most unpleasant directors I've ever worked with, by the name of Otto Preminger, and it was called Bunny Lake is Missing, and I came home after shooting one day, and my wife said, you got to call your agent. He's very anxious to talk to you. So I called them. There was a time difference, so I called them the next morning. And he said, the next day, and he said, are you sitting down? I said, no, why? Well, you better sit down, because you've just been offered the lead in Stanley Kubrick's next film.
Wow.
Out of the blue, had no idea. I didn't meet anybody connected with it. Had no idea that I was being considered.
Go meet Keir Dulay.
Pod Bay doors open at 7, as you will be interviewed on stage by film historian Raymond Benson. This is all happening Wednesday night. The Pickwick Theater Classic Film Series in Park Ridge. Keir Dulay, thank you so much. It's such an honor to meet you.
Well, thank you. It's been a very pleasant interview. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Keir Dulay, everybody. Keir Dulay.
Amazing.
Yeah.
All right, quick break. More show. It's Bill. It's Wendy at 720 WGN.